today on Rockin' the Suburbs.
We like to say we've forgotten better songs than most bands come up with.
All right, hey, this is Jim. Welcome to Rockin' the Suburbs. We have a very special guest, somebody you have heard many, many, many times on this this program, especially if you are a longtime listener. First, I want to mention Patrick Foster is not here today. Tried to have him join for this recording, and he was busy with something else, probably a dog matter. I don't know, something like that. So anyway, welcome to Rockin' the Suburbs. I'm Jim Lenihan, and I have with me the guys from the band Quart Jar. And when I mentioned, you probably have heard them before, they recorded what was our theme music for 1,000 episodes of the show. And wow. and then another band just out of the blue covered that theme music. So we kind of switched over and ran that for a while, but we'll probably come back to the Quart Jar version at some point. In fact, for today's episode, you heard the Quart Jar version, the original version. The song is called Ascension, I believe. I think that's what you had told me at one point, Randall.
Let me go look at our website.
Yeah, I'll just tell you guys real quickly that when we launched the podcast, I reached out to Randall here and I asked, you know, do you have something that we could use for just a little bit of theme music? And he said, oh, I've got this cool guitar riff I just worked up, and you can use that. So that's what happened. So anyway, with me here is Randall Brown. Hello, Randall.
Hello.
Here we go. And Randall, introduce the other guys in Quart Jar.
All right. Well, on this side, well, is it? Let me point at everybody. Yes. I think I always end up doing that when we're doing a Zoom interview. Well, we have bass player Malcolm Norman.
Hello.
Hey, Malcolm. And
hey, buddy.
Drummer extraordinaire, percussionist, everybody, Tori Flanagan.
Hello.
Hey, Tori.
Hi.
Good to see you guys. Good to see you guys. We've talked with Randall in the past, but I haven't talked with you guys before. And, you know, I've heard a lot of your music, so it's great to meet the guys behind it. So I mentioned, you know, Quart Jar, we're longtime fans here on Rockin' the Suburbs. You guys are in Knoxville, Tennessee.
Yes.
That's home base.
That's right. And we wanted to have you on specifically now because you have a new album out called Life's Not Pretty. And we just thought we'd run through that album track by track and talk a little bit about each of the different songs. And before we do that, tell people, where can they get this album?
Well, you can get all our music on our Bandcamp, quartjar.bandcamp.com. It can also be downloaded, streamed at any number of the major streaming services, Apple Music, Spotify. What's the nice one that the Tidal?
It's all those places.
And ones when you click distribute everywhere, it shows you a list on that service, and there's ones, you know, I've never heard of. They're only actually relevant in like Botswana or someplace like that.
Yes. You guys are big in Botswana, yes. I hear. Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. I hope so. We're big in Dublin and some town in Canada.
And also, if you're ancient, CDs are available too.
Yes, we do.
For those people who know what CDs are.
We did, for this full album, we got CDs pressed again. We had a couple of EPs that only went digital.
Right.
But for the full experience, we've...
We wanted music we could open up and smell.
Yeah.
You know, touch, smell. And it's hard to do that when it's just out in the ether.
That's right. That's right. So how do people get the CD? Also from Bandcamp or through your website? Or how do they do that?
At this point, they should email me or send me a message.
Yeah, come on by.
And maybe drop by the house. We don't have the kind of distribution network that a band should have. we can be contacted and a CD can be shipped.
All right. We'll get all that information out to people. So here's what we're going to do. We'll talk a little bit about this album and these various songs. And we'll talk a little bit about, just, you know, Quart Jar as a band, what you guys do. But first, let's get into this album a little bit. The first track is what? It's some crowd noise, right?
It's archival audio footage, field recording. Alan Lomax did it. No, he didn't. It's a representation of our memories of concert pre-show at the big arena here for many years. And compared to other arenas, it is a large club at this point. Our Civic Coliseum here in Knoxville is where we would go hear the Arena Rock back in the day. And we threw some memories together and created the audio visage of that moment right before the lights go down, the curtain drops,
right.
And some MC off in the distance says, ta-da! A
couple of fireworks thrown up on the stage.
Yeah, people
back
throwing
in the old
firecrackers.
Days, remember?
Yes, yes.
Civic Coliseum here also in Knoxville was Randy Rhoads' last gig.
Oh, yeah.
That building, is that right? So.
Well, this, yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
It's the last place he performed with the Blizzard of Oz. Yeah.
So it's our home, and it's my dream gig if we ever get to play there.
Well, first off, I think all arenas should be called the Civic something, the Civic Center, the Civic, what is the Civic Coliseum, Civic Auditorium. Any of those would work for me. I like that. I like place name and Civic, and then, you know,
yeah,
whatever. It's
like,
old that's rugged, the way it should be. It's lovable. Oh,
yeah. None of this, you know, none of this there. Sponsored, you know, naming, none of that stuff.
Yes.
But second of all, tell me, who have you guys seen perform at the Civic Coliseum?
Oh, wow.
Oh, wow. Well, my first concert was Uriah Heep and Blue Oyster Cult, so you can imagine how far back that was, okay? That was back in the good old 70s when I was still in high school.
Right.
So, yeah.
I've seen Iron Maiden, Judas Priest, Kiss many times.
Yeah,
I mean,
yes.
I've been going to concerts since about 83, and I was lucky. My mom used to drop me off at the front of the Civic Coliseum, like at the skating rink, drop me off before the show, and said, be here at 11, so I'd go in and see the show and come out, and she'd pick me up. So I always got to go to concerts at a young age. So, I mean, I've seen, Lord.
Oh, yeah.
30 shots. Civic Coliseum, and then they built Thompson Bowling Arena, which is where the basketball played. Not near as good.
It
sounds like crap in there.
Though we play there, too.
Randall, you seen any shows at the Civic Coliseum?
Oh, yes. The Civic Coliseum, my first things I saw there were like Disney on Ice before I caught the rock and roll bug.
Right.
But I think one of my first and favorite memories is seeing Kiss there. 78 or 79. That may be why I picked 78, but I think this might have been 79. Kiss with Judas Priest opening. So it was very much original Kiss. It was the Dynasty Tour. So
I'm in 79.
Was that 79? Okay. my archivist has confirmed 79. You know, they rose out of the dry ice fog on the stage, and before you even knew it, it was like, oh, it's actually them. That's what these statues are that are rising from the fog. And then I think the next time I saw Kiss there, strangely enough, the Plasmatics opened. Huh. So that was a whole different trip. But then, like Tori said, Iron Maiden. I always think about the concerts that were paired together. It sounded like they had two headliners, like Iron Maiden, Quiet Riot.
Yeah, I was at that one. Yeah.
You know that one? Yeah. And then, of course, Kiss and Judas Priest. It just sounds like, you know, some 70s legend.
And we went to a lot of the same concerts. You know, we're basically the same age. So, you know, we attended the same shows together. Not together, but, you know, it's the same shows.
From the other side of town, yeah.
Right,
yeah.
Right.
And let's see, another great one there was Stevie Ray Vaughan.
Oh, nice.
And that was amazing, especially, you know, a couple of years later, he died tragically, and right. It was great to have seen him in full bore Stevie Ray Vaughan glory.
I didn't get to see him when I lived in L.A., so that was a cool thing with Jeff Beck. So I did get to see those two guys.
That's
together.
A good one.
Yeah.
But that was in L.A.?
Yeah, it was in L.A., But anyway, but Tool also played at the Civic Coliseum several years ago, and I think that's the last band I saw.
Oh, yeah, Tool and Melvins?
Yep.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
So it's a hard rocking place, Civic Coliseum.
It can be, We've got
the local hockey team plays there now, the city hockey team. You know, it's one of those places. It's not very pretty. It's stone. There's no glass really, but right. It's lush, you know.
Yeah. Just this well-worn down. Probably the, right. Like concrete edifice, right? And you walk yeah. in yeah. and then you are prepared to be rocked.
Exactly.
Okay. All right, good. So let's get into the second track on the album. So this is where the album really gets going, right? Want yes. some, get some. About that song, I noticed lyrically it's a bit sparse, but there's a lot of lot else happening in that song, right?
Yeah, that as many things comes from practice room BSing and being silly, and the drum opening, did it inspire us to do the Coliseum thing? Was that the big idea?
Yeah.
The idea is that, you know, as the crowd is roaring, it's suddenly overcome by that first drum roll. And so we had, I think we had the riff. I was trying to do a couple of like AC/DC chords. So I did the big chord riff and, it caught on with the fellers and, we decided it sounded really like, in your face. So we,
it sounds like a kind of early 80s metal to me.
Yeah.
You know,
mm-hmm.
But nothing wrong with that as far as I'm concerned, you know. So,
it made it just your opening song. That's what it was written for. This is going to be the opening song, right. Our gig, and then, you know, it's just going to kick ass and just come out and gah. You know, that's basically, you know, every rock band has that song that they open up with. So, I mean, that was kind of our throwing the hat in the ring on that one and just.
Right.
Yeah, the kind of aggression of those chords led into like you want some of this kind of thought. So we turned that into the song.
Too busy rocking to be eloquent with lyrics on that one.
Yeah.
So does your music come together when you guys get together? Do you just sort of jam a bit and songs kind of come out of that?
Yeah.
Most times it really does. I mean, probably 95% of the time. You know.
Very rarely anybody comes in with pre-done stuff and said, okay, play this.
Not like, here's my demo. You guys do this, right? It's not like that.
It comes out of jamming.
Yeah.
Like when I first started looking for other people to play with, I had songs written for like, you know, present, solo, strummy strum, John Prine aspirations and whatever. And so as folks have come and gone and you know, we kind of coalesced as a trio, the old dreams come out of, I was like, hey, we could rock.
Right. So the way you write songs is collaboratively.
Yeah. It's gotten very collaborative over the, since we got together in this, this lineup, as they say.
Usually kind of one way, I'll start off with a drum beat, or me and Malcolm will just start jamming on something, and then something organically just kind of rolls with that. Or the opposite, Randall just start beating on a note or a chord and playing something, and we just kind of jump in on that. And then after we just, okay, let's establish this and make sure we don't forget it. That's the hard part, is make sure we don't forget it.
Yeah, I know.
And then once we actually have structure in it, Randall, you know, usually write lyrics, or actually lyrics are kind of written just kind of, sometimes I'll bark out a line or something like that, and he'll write it down real quick, or it just kind of comes like that. I like writing lyrics as much as I can, but I'm not near as good as Randall, though.
Oh, so. Yeah, it's very rare that when at our rehearsals, that if we don't come out with something new or a snippet of something that's going to develop into something later.
Yeah.
There's always, almost every practice, we got a new song out of this one.
Right.
It's great. And just to have that kind of feeling with each other.
And a lot of times we'll be jamming, we'll even have like just sort of fall into a second part, so it's like, oh, we're almost arranging something on the fly,
right?
And we finish it, and we're like, that was so cool, and it's usually Tori who says, and we weren't recording, were we? And I'm like, no,
because there have been times we'll actually just start jamming, we'll play, go into a bridge and like a chorus, and then we'll basically finish the song all the way through just on a jam.
Yeah.
And sometimes we remember it, and sometimes we don't.
It's like, you remember that one? That
we tried
like
recording
this.
Our practices, but we just, I don't know. We just get in and do it, I guess.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah.
I try to use the memo thing on my phone to just, like, if something's going, there's a lot of times where it's like, oh, I got to hit that button.
Right. Well, hopefully the really good ones stick, right?
We hope so.
Yeah, absolutely.
We like to say we've forgotten better songs than most bands come up with.
I think that's probably true. And before we move on to the next song, because this seems like a good time to discuss this too, when you were talking about all those bands that you saw at the Civic Coliseum, are those all bands you would consider influences on Court Jar?
Yeah, one way or another.
Probably, I'm sure. Yeah, I've seen tons of bands there. I mean, 70s up to the early 80s. So, I was a developing bass player around that time, so everything I took in and it soaked it all in the best I could, no matter who I was hearing.
Well, all three of us kind of, I guess, was educated by different schools in a way. You know, Malcolm is a little bit more like the Black Sabbath, Uriah Heap,
Iron Maiden,
John Paul Jones,
Led Zeppelin guy.
I can't, like I said, Tommy Lee, Iron Maiden, and some of that's Van Halen, and that era of music. And Randall came from more of a, Butthole Surfers or
The Butthole Surfers were a big influence on me back in the day. But I came out of the era of, loving some hard rock, and then filtered that through punk and stuff, from Black Flag to Butthole Surfers. Of course, I can't go 5 minutes without mentioning the Flaming Lips and their influence on me.
He was waiting for that.
Did you have a timer set, Jim? That's right. And so I was asked to do a bio for a solo thing I'm doing. And songwriting wise, I could probably boil it down to John Prine meets Wayne Coyne, and somebody else thrown in there, just like earthy, spacey.
Right.
Lyrically anyway. But then guitar wise, I think I was stuck on my very first guitar teacher, who said, I'm going to teach you some blues riffs. And I was like, okay. And so you could probably track back a lot of my influence to just 1/4-5 guitar.
I've heard a couple of people say Warren Zevon.
Warren Zevon. I'll take it.
You're kind of a Warren Zevon-ish.
I'll take it.
Okay. So what is the next song here? Beautiful Disaster.
We'll be right back. the world. All them boys and girls, step up and give it a whirl. Oh, the pain and laughter, now and hereafter. It's a beautiful disaster.
Somebody mentioned, Malcolm mentioned Black Sabbath influence. I hear Sabbath in this song, right?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Well, now, actually, Randall came up with that the riff that sounds just like it. Of course, I fell right into it because, yes, that's right down my alley, and it's probably one of my favorite songs on there. Number one, I kind of get to ramble around a little bit, you know, because Geezer Butler, the bass player of Sabbath, is one of my heroes, and it has everything. I also love the intro. It's real intricate between me and Randall. Yeah, I love that song. It's got everything. It's got the Sabbath. It's got a little Maiden in it, you know.
The whole ending is Maiden, I think.
Yeah, I think before we named it, I think our code name for it was Maiden Sabbath.
Yeah.
Because of the path it takes.
And in my head, whenever we do something, if I have it in like it sounds like Maiden. So if you're a big Maiden fan, you know, there's a lot of those China Boy crashes at the end of this. You know, I tried to make it sound as Maiden as possible, I guess. Yeah. It's influences, you know, it's what you're talking about, as influences come out. And anytime I can bring Nico McBrain, something like that out, you know, it's fun. It's more of a tribute instead of, I guess, trying to copy.
Yeah.
That's great.
And the guitar solo, for lack of a better thing to call it, is my longest guitar solo that is the same every time, because it finally, I used to be like, oh, that was a pretty good one, I wonder what I'll do next time. But that one, it's almost like the guitar part became part of the lyrics, because I'm like, oh, I got to do that one thing now. Because so for me, Beautiful Disaster is one of my favorite tracks on there, because it seems like we really realized something that we intended to with this one. So.
It sounds to me, the way you guys are talking, that perhaps Beautiful Disaster is sort of a description of the band in some way.
Yeah.
That you mentioned it.
That sounds good.
I hope that's okay that I said that.
Look at us.
Yeah.
No, that's cool, man.
Yeah, you got it right.
Well, that also goes to the joke of the chorus of the title track we'll get to later.
Yeah.
Life's not pretty, but we can be.
Yes, exactly. Absolutely.
Disaster. I came up with the name of it. I saw a girl walking out of a store, out of a, like a Weigel's or whatever. And she had like Beautiful on one forearm, going from her hand down to her elbow, and Disaster on the other, tattooed. So I just saw this girl.
Nice.
She was out there smoking a cigarette, and it looked like she was having a hard, hard day. That just kind of stuck with me. So
we got to find her for the video.
Yeah, really.
But that's great. So how long have you guys been playing together?
Is this, I think this marks 13 years.
Wow.
That's three. Yeah. Randall or Malcolm and me has been playing together for 25 now.
Yeah. Yeah. Mentor been in a number of bands together. So,
Well, straight, but on and off since 95, I think since 1995, we've been.
Of course, Randall was had Court Jar going before we came around, and with another lineup. And then,
right.
I had 5 or 6 years of, you know, tryouts for the final lineup. No. Great, great folks played with before, and you know how people come and go. And one bass player left, and the former drummer knew Malcolm, and then that drummer left, and Malcolm knew Tori, and so it all came
Donnie
together
for a second time.
Yeah, but Tori has replaced the other drummer in a couple of bands.
When I first got together, me and Malcolm first got together in '95. There was a drummer named Donnie, and he had just quit the band. I just came in, first time I'd ever met Malcolm or anything, and I replaced him. Well, many, many years later, Donnie was the drummer of this band, and Malcolm came and got me to join the band when he quit. So I just run around and join bands that this guy quits, basically.
But the three of you have been together for, you said, 13 years, right?
13, so, 2010.
So what do you think, what makes this lineup work?
What makes this work?
Well, I tell you, we're all pretty easygoing guys.
No egos.
That's a good one. Yeah, no egos.
No arguments.
And we have a lot of fun. I mean, I've been involved in a lot of bands in my life. And when I first joined, you know, with Randall, to me, his style of music was kind of like Americanish and stuff. And I had never done that. I said, okay. But it slowly developed into something else. The more I got my hooks into it, you know. So, hey. But yeah, they're just a fun group of guys. I think it's the maturity level for, well, you can use that term loosely, I guess. But, you know, we can talk about anything with each other. And you know, I've been in a bunch of bands, like I say. But with these two guys, I don't think there's been a better chemistry, apparently, because I haven't been in a band that's lasted this long. The one before this was 10 years. So
we've never argued about anything. We're going to piss off a lot of other bands right now. No, seriously, though, we've never had an argument about anything. We've never had a disagreement about anything. We don't even need to knock on wood for that one. Yeah, you know, seriously, I mean, because we're so easy to go, okay, you want to do this? Yeah, we'll do that. I mean, our music is so wide open. It's like, well, no, that's not our style. It's never been said. Ever, you know, so I mean, it's just, you know, we enjoy each other's company, I guess, and we've never, like I said, never argued.
Well, it's like with these guys, anything goes. You can throw anything out there.
Do a country song, okay.
Yeah, just anything, any idea it will be considered, you know, and jammed on, or if it passes.
Plus, Randall puts up with a lot of our bull.
Well, you've done, I mean, in the past, you've done some pretty ambitious music. I mean, you've done some stuff with, you know, that's sort of rock opera-ish, or, you know, various movements and stuff like that. And, you know, I think this album is a little more straightforward, right?
I would agree with you on that. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, in a good way. I mean, it's like, it's rock and roll. Right. But I'm just saying, I can tell you guys, are very creative and open to, you know, kind of exploring different ideas. It definitely comes through. So let's talk about the next song here, Temporary Armageddon, which is, what, mostly instrumental with some, like, spoken word stuff in there?
Build a house out of straw and sticks. Build a house out of concrete bricks. Build a house you can build again after the world comes tumbling in. Everything falls apart. Nothing lasts forever. Even every catastrophe is.
Thought process on that. Yeah.
Well, that is a song that was in the crock pot for years.
Okay.
The Sonic crock pot. And Malcolm brought this Sonic riff to practice.
Pot. That's a great album.
You like that? Yeah.
That's great.
future album name, Sonic Crock Pot. So Malcolm had this riff, and a lot of times Malcolm's got just like these amazing riffs that he's got sitting around, and sometimes he'll share one, and he'll share it, and we'll go, let's put something on that. So we had this. We even had the tracking done forever, and we knew we wanted to mix something in there to that.
To the arrangement. Once it went down on tape, you know, we actually heard it back, it's like, well, there's some holes that need to be filled, I think, you know.
And I think I said first it needed some kind of narration or something. And
It had, we actually performed it in years ago, and I had an app, like a weird kind of keyboard app on my iPad. And so I would put the iPad in front of me, and then during the, what sort of works as a chorus, I would wave my hand, just wave my finger back and forth on the sort of keys of this, synthesizer app. And it would, you know, go crazy and, roughly in the key that we were playing in. And so we, as happens, you tend to want to simplify things. So it's like, yeah, I don't want to set that iPad thing up. Let's see. So I came up with a guitar riff, that followed what that was doing, which is a lot of like slides up and down just for the dive bomb kind of thing. But I think it was one of the last things we did for the album was let's see what we can add to Temporary Armageddon.
And then it snowballed.
And then it was, you know, the dam burst. And I was trying to think of how it got started. One of us said, you know, we should have, like Malcolm said, some dialogue or some sound.
Basically, it's the end of the world. And there's just like the three of us are sitting around talking, but we're not. It's on the ham radio, you know, because everything's gone. And we don't really know what the hell's going on. You know, nobody else does. It's just, you know, what the hell's going on? You know, and that's with the sirens and the war horn and all this other stuff. It's like, well, let's add that. Well, let's add this. We just kept adding layers and layers until it was ridiculous. And then we added about 10 more, and it turned in really, I think, one of my favorite tracks of the album, because it's just, it can almost give you chills too if you think about it. I mean, it's
a great track.
It has that creepy feeling in a way, but
yeah, I started calling it
comical too,
like 3.5 minute disaster movie soundtrack.
All right.
I don't think I've ever seen Tori as excited specifically about a sound as when I said, I put an air raid siren on it, and I played him the track, and Tori's like, that, yes, that's exactly what I was talking about. And I was like, I have fulfilled my mission. I have a habit of doing all kinds of crazy voices, and mostly to the amusement of my wife. And we were like, we need an old man on there. And so the old man voice is me. And then the middle part is Malcolm and Tori kind of portray, like he was saying, ham radio, or like some neighbors going, they're in the middle of the apocalypse, and they're like, do you know what's going on? Is anybody called? You know.
And the first old dude is like, imagine an old guy in a rocking chair, you know, on a log cabin front porch, talking back and forth saying that. You know, that's kind of the feel of it, I guess.
Right.
That's what I get out of it anyway.
Yeah, we write a lot of movies that could be optioned.
That's right. So what is your recording process like as you're talking about adding these, you know, different sounds and textures to it and all that kind of stuff? Like, how do you record?
Well, I know your audience can't see what you can see on this Zoom call, but welcome to Quartzar Headquarters.
It's glorious.
We have a Tascam 24-track digital Porta Studio, and that's what we do the main tracking on. We've gone to some other studios, and I've always wanted to be the studio guy as well as the music guy, to know how to just take it all straight to, you know, a released track. So we've got the multi-tracker, and that really helps us get, you know, the drums, bass, and scratch guitar and vocals all at once. And then I literally take the SD card out of that and stick it in my computer and pull it into Logic Pro these days. And so we can then add things after the fact that we haven't tracked on the original. And I know that there's probably a lot of people who would say, you know, you could just plug that in, or you could do it. And I was like, yeah, I figured this out and it's working. So just going to stick to it. But yeah, a lot of the real studio stuff is in Logic Pro these days.
Okay. So let's get into the next tune here is an instrumental and it's like acoustic, right? So Flew West.
Yeah, oh yeah.
Yeah.
JetBlue 2761, contact departure, good morning.
The departure, good morning.
So how'd that come about?
Having said all that, I got to turn it all over to Tori because he did that whole thing.
Wow.
Yeah. The acoustic part, the main picking part I've had is kind of just a – I play guitar too, by the way.
Okay. Good to know.
It's just something like, you know, Sweet Child of Mine was Slash. You know, it's just something you play as soon as you pick up a guitar, you know, just to warm up with.
Yep.
So that was always kind of my little practice warm-up thing. And my father had passed a couple years ago, and I really wanted to do something for him, you know, just some sort of a music piece or something. And so, yeah, I took that picking piece and then added layers of lap steel and 12 string and 6 string. So there's different layers. I've got a studio at my house. So I did, all this was done at my house.
Okay.
We just brought it in and put it on the album.
Oh, wow.
So, he mastered it. Randall mastered it a little bit and I think tweaked it up a little bit.
Yeah. But, I ran it through that Abbey Road
thing. Yeah. But you know, as far as, you know, the whole piece, that was all me in one day. But I was wanting, and I brought this up wanting to do that selfishly. You know, I brought it up to the guys, like, why don't we do like our own little acoustic piece or our own little pretty piece in this album? Because it's life's not pretty. It's all supposed to be all heavy and dark, and it all has a dark overtone. You know, it's just a little bit of sunshine from each of us, you know, and kind of show off our talents a little bit too. And, you know, I'll play it kind of like on the Kiss solo albums, but just on this, you know. So, you know, they did their musical pieces, which is wonderful too. And it was a lot of fun. It's the first time I've ever got to record guitar on anything, you know, and I've been in band since I was 16. So it was great to be able to play guitar and trick these guys into letting me play guitar and putting it on an album.
But we was real tickled when we heard him and ran looking at each other. Wow, man. This is really cool.
With the title though, Flew West is my dad was an airline pilot for many years.
Okay.
Mountain US Air, and he had retired and he'd done it for years, and that's what he loved to do more than anything was fly. And when he did pass, that Flew West is what pilots, that's their last flight. That's what pilots say about other pilots. They flew west, that's they're flying into the sunset basically.
Yeah.
So that's all the airplane stuff at the beginning, at the end of all of that is a tribute to my dad.
Nice. Very nice. Well, I'll tell you, in terms of sequencing, it makes sense to me because I look at this and think like, well, that's the end of side one, you know, it just is a nice,
thank you.
You know, side one ender, right? Yeah. Feels right. Okay. But then you turn the record over and what do you get here? You get End Times Tango, but you're going to have to wait until tomorrow for the rest of the album. All right, we're going to pause here. This is the end of episode one with Quart Jar. Tomorrow, tune in and you will get tracks 6 through 10 of Life's Not Pretty. Thanks very much to the guys. I am Jim Lenihan. Thank you for listening to Rock in the Suburbs. We will talk to you tomorrow. And Tori, I want to get back to your lyric writing. Are you a Neil Peart fan?
No, actually. Oh. Well, I take that back. I was thinking about this the other day. Here in Knoxville, most of the drummers from my league came from two schools, Neil Peart, John Bonham.
Yep.
I'm John Bonham.